Accession number 4686, rule number 5.
Mr. Iveson, tape 5. Could you continue your story of the second tribunal? This would be, wouldn't it?
Yes. So I said again, I repeated it, if I've said anything wrong, I wish to withdraw it. And Judge Burge again said the applicant has no need to withdraw anything. So I came to the conclusion that whilst Bob Edwards hadn't fed me properly, there was somewhere, it was somewhere near what he'd done, but I weren't just absolutely on the mark. But there was no withdrawal about Herbert Morrison, because he were picking apples in the First World War as a CO in an orchard. He went working on the land. So from that we spoke of so many things as a socialist. We always tried to put a socialist case and use it as a platform.
What would you have said for your socialist case? Can you remember?
Yeah, well, as near as I can say, is that the First World War had been a war to end wars. People believing that had left the slums and gone to fight for a better Britain. The sons were now leaving the same slums to again fight for Britain, and it were quite possible it would run true to form that they'd come back to those slums and their kids might in the future be fighting again from Britain, from leaving those slums still there, which has turned out true. They haven't knocked them down yet, so many of them. And that it was a war of profit. If there were no profit, there'd be no war. If nobody were doing it on a free and gratis basis from the heads. And those were the lines that you worked on. I did say at that time that I couldn't fight. How would I put it? I might do for a government of my choice, and giving the impression that under certain circumstances I might take up arms. Now, I could foresee in those days possible, you know, but fascism was equally at home, as it were, abroad. We were adopting fascist methods to fight fascism, and therefore we're going to win. What would happen? Somebody might be victorious, but in the victory, was it going to be fascism that won? And that was the basis that I did. Well, you get struck. He said I was the most honest applicant he'd had. Judge Burgess said that, and he wished he could have heard more of my views, and perhaps me listen to his. But unfortunately, I hadn't brought myself within the Act, and therefore I was struck off the register of conscientious objectors. Because you register provisionally, aren't you? And you register. So then you appeal. Well, I appealed, but I was building up a bit of a reputation. I'd started speaking for other, and before I went for myself, I'd been speaking for other people. As Union Secretary, I took a plumber and spoke for him against Judge Peel at Lancaster. Spoke for several at Lancaster. Spoke for some, I think it must have been Preston, or what? It must have been Manchester. The appellate tribunal was Manchester. So I was getting known. We were meeting these people again, because they started saying when he was speaking, "What's your view?" And I said, "Well, I'm not here to express my views. I'm speaking for these fellows." "Yes, but we'd like to know your views." "Well, I give my views so many times." So I went before the appellate, and of course it was upheld, the decision of the local. Well, shortly after, I got called, you know, your medical, to go for your medical. Well, you don't go. You just ignore it. There you go. Then the police come with a summons. And you have to go to court at Blackburn. And I went to Blackburn. Well, you go, as you went to Blackburn, and this indicates what happened. And it was the day after. You go there and speak it in Blackburn, in the court. And I know there was a list of people before me, a long line. And they all got fined 5 shilling. The aperture in the torch was bigger than the one inch across. If you remember, you could have a flash lamp, but if it was bigger than the aperture, as they called it, above an inch, you was in trouble with the authorities. Well, these here had been shining the torch, and they were all fined 5 shilling. Oh, they were all, they were going through like, oh, you know, like on a belt system. And then I came along on mine. Well, of course, you would go up to about £2 for refusing medical. And you're ordered to be taken before the medical board. Well, a detective takes you, you know. You're put in your cells, in the local cells, braces, shoelaces and belt taken from you. Then they come for you and take you. And they say, you know, they do things, so get undressed. I said, no. I'm not getting undressed, I'm wasting time, let's go back. Get undressed. So, you don't do, of course, you just refuse. So they take you to the final doctor, and he just ignores all of them. Get undressed, let's get on, we've got a lot to work on this morning. Like I said, we're not having any argument. I'm not getting undressed, I'm not being medic. So after an argument, they say, will you sign here? And I said, no. We'd always been told with the old gang not to sign. Now, this had never cropped up with those that had been before me, whether they'd signed or not, and they kept persisting to me to sign. And everything's getting worked up. And they said to me, will you write on? I refused to be medically examined. I said, I'll do that, and sign it. I said, I'll do that. And I ringed it. And what the others had done, I never did know, and I seem to forget to ask. So then you're taken back, and you come up before the courts again, and you're convicted. 6 months in the first case. And you ask for the £2 or £3 fine, and you get a month concurrently. Then they took me to Walton, in a 300 weight van when there was a big petrol shortage. And as you're going on the road at Walton, and you could see through this green glass, there was a girl in front, a policewoman and a fellow policeman. As we're going on the road, there's a great big sign on some hoardings. Oh, a massive sign. Oh, as high as that, 3 or 4 times long. Is your journey really necessary? These used to be all over during war, you know, but little ones, this would be. Well, I started laughing, you see. A 30-underweight van, a man and a woman to take me to.
You were the only one in this, yes, enormous van. One.
And he used all this petrol from Blackburn to a Walton jail. And I laughed, and they nudging one of them. One's telling the other to look through, back and they look, and they can't understand me laughing. I couldn't give up. Maybe my sense of humour is different to anybody else's, but all I could think were, if they'd have given me my bus fare, I'd have saved them all this trouble, I'd have come now myself. So they take you in. Now that's when you start. You haven't a clue what's happening. Get undressed. You take everything off, and you go into a bar. And you come out, they give you prison clothes. Then you're shoved into a reception cell, waiting the doctor who comes when he's ready. Could be 2 or 3 hours, and he comes. And you go to him, he said, are you all right? Yes. No illness, no aches, no. Right, that's your medical examination. You waited 3 hours for that. And then he said...
He didn't touch you at all?
Not a thing, no. In fact, a little incident happened. One had to go in separate. And he says, put that in your pocket. I never forgot this. And it was a VD visiting card to a clinic. And I say, you're so, it isn't that you're frightened, but you don't know what's happening. You don't know what's coming next. Nobody tells you anything. And you're just there and you're pushed to wherever you're going or you come in. And this bloke just shoved him in my hand. Get in your pocket. Well, you've only one pocket, do you? So, I waited and I didn't know what it were. It was after. And it was an outpatient at some clinic in Liverpool for VD disease. He said, I'll get caught with this now. Anyway, they put me in my cell, H117, also. Ground floor. The morning after, walking on exercise, a bloke come and pushed me to the toilets. He was slick. He knew he'd been in the floor, he knew his way around. Because you can't move from there to there without permission, you know, unless you get a red bond. Where's that card? Anyway, I took it to be him who gave me it the day before, because they all looked alike in these grey suits. I was glad to give it to him and get rid. And I give it to him. That was my first incident inside there. The next one was, you go and take your stool onto a wing to get your jobs made good. Well, more often than not, it's Chief Screw, Chief PO. And they take a few particulars and they allocate you a job. And there was a bloke there, pushed some cigarettes into me. You have a bag, your pillow slip, with, what will it be, in a towel, a Bible, prayer book. Should be another shirt. And toothbrush, a hairbrush. Things like that. And shove some cigarettes in, some matches. And when I went to Quaker meeting on Sunday, this fellow was in, as a Quaker. And he'd been giving cigarettes out all over. He was on remand. He wasn't with us. And he made a break from one of his courts. And they all said that's what he'd been doing when he was giving cigarettes out like he was. We're building up friendships. For making an escape somehow or other. This is what they all said. I was just a novice, but I had these cigarettes and smoked them. Now, they put me in a bike shop, and I was darning bags, mail bags. I wasn't very proficient, and I was darning them. But then they threw me some in my cell. Just thrown in, you know.
You were alone in your cell?
Oh, yes, yes. And I was roping, what they call roping, that's being roped round top. If you read Fenerbahce's book, it's 8 inches to... 8 stitches to inch. And I was doing that. A fella to come and show me how to do it. We only did so much, and then I had to do it. It's quite simple. It must have been him, so I could do it. And I was in... It's the worst time I had. I was in the bike shop. No speaking, no anything. And I was hungry, no extra food, no nothing. Till they come and they took me. And they took me in to sit governor. Again, it's governor's, that's what they called it. It weren't governor, it was chief officer, chief principal officer, chief PO. But you said to see the governor, to see him. And they asked me if I was honest. And I said, well, I considered so. Before I came in here. He said, we know you was before you came in, are you now? Well, I always made a joke about that after. I'd gone to the House of Correction. There was no doubt I was honest before when I went in, but within 3 or 4 days, there was a doubt. It admitted by the governor, he wanted to know. And I kidded the screws on this, the ones you could do. So, he said, I was going to go outside of prison. Oh, he said, what is your job outside of here? I said, a plumber. And he said something about what sort of a plumber or whether or something. And I said, well, if you care to let me out, I could earn a living without any difficulty at it. I have done up to now. So they said, would I not, well, I could hold the good name of the prison, going in the homes and doing repairs. I wouldn't do anything to disgrace the prison, like he meant. You know, it was almost the old school time, everything. So I started going out, working in these homes, putting baths in and hot and cold water.
What, out in the community?
In Screw's homes, they're all round the prison. Well, you see, when these people go out to working, these Screws, there's a bit of rivalry between the wives. The husband likes to know that his wife will give him a good morning break, so they won't say he's a skinny devil, his wife, and so on. So there's a little competition. Wherever you go, each tries to give you a good deal. So they were giving the Screws cake, and I got it. First one I went to was a couple of cream crackers. It was a miserable dinner. Didn't make much impression on my appetite. The second one was Mrs. Green, a Welsh woman. And I'd had words with her husband who was a Screw, or a swine inside. Outside he was real tough. She was a wonderful woman, wonderful woman. She thought the plumber should be well fed, and she used to make you sandwiches, buttered meat, and you know, during war she couldn't give you anything. I mean, it was a bit of a struggle to give you a bit of buttered meat. But potted meat in there was quite a banquet. And she gave the lad the two Screws, had a discipline Screw and an engineer Screw, work Screw. Well, she gave them 2 pieces of cake each. But she gave me 2 pieces of cake as well as some sandwiches. And she did this every day. Well, the third engineer who we were was never known to smile. And I was complimented, I got him laughing, you see. And he used to ask me, could he have a sandwich? Could he have, I went for it, could he have one of these bits of sandwiches? And he'd give me 2 pieces of cake. And the other Screw would say, don't eat all now, put it in your handkerchief and I'll search you when you're going in. Well, he just went over you, see, cake and what? But in yourself, you could have it when you had your tea, because you had no variety in there. And especially during war. So that were how we started. And he was a blacksmith. Was this third engineer, but he loved to do a bit of plumbing. There weren't much blacksmithing in jail. But he weren't a good one, because he were only self-trained. Now, in those days, the art of plumbing was the coupling 2 pieces of lead pipe together with the white joint. And still did it. They ain't much done now. It's all sticking together with nuts or solder. You just blow a simple job. Then it was a skilled job, and they had the plumber in. Well, prison's like the capitalist world. There's pickings for a few, but not for the many. Well, I was the few. In fact, it the most interesting position for me, I was the only one. Well, I knew this. Being the only one in, I could take little liberties, because if they took me off job, they always were out a plumber, and they'd have to wait for another coming in. And it seemed that the plumbers were fairly low abiding. There were a shortage of plumbers, plenty of painters, plenty of joiners, no plumbers. So we got on fairly well. But when this Screw weren't here, they used to give me cigarettes, did my discipline Screw. And I'd smoke or get out at road, and I kept going up into the top to have a smoke, because I had a candle lit up there and I could light up, you know. And they didn't know what I was doing up there. I was doing not only smoking, but they thought I would your bank tank once or twice. And he used to give me a woodbine and light one himself, take 2 draws, drop it up floor, and with his shoe just nip the end off and say, I'll go and pick a shovel up, plumber. Well, I had that up in my pocket in a crap. And he used to say, have you any matches? I said, have you out to smoke tonight? He said, have a dog in. He's sometimes a gear on. He said, have you a match? But when I got with Mrs. Green, she gave me 3 or 4 to take in at night. And she gave me one day when one at school for them, who said, "Plumber, give it back, you know the rules." Everything went deathly quiet. And she said, then she said, "He come with his lighter and lit it for me, you know." She said, "If you want to give me that cigarette, you've never got another cup of tea in this house as long as you were here." So it broke the ice. I was smoking. And they used to give me them. But yeah, see, the others don't get things like that. They were in a mailbag shop. They could have been cased for having a cigarette. Whereas I was smoking. Not a lot, but I was smoking.
It sounds as if you had a very good life.
Compared with the other prisoners,
yes. Did these ladies whose homes you went to repair the plumbing, did they know what you were there for?
Yes.
What was their attitude towards?
They weren't bothered. They were getting about it, and they'd been wanting one for years, and they hadn't got one. And they were getting one in. They didn't care what I'd done, murder, rape, or anything, so long as they got the bath in. Because one day, one door's got locked, and they couldn't open it. Because she didn't know what I went in for. She said, "Could I open it? Plumber, can you open that door?" And I said, "Yeah." So I looked at Screw, and he said, "Get it open, Plumber." So I got a block of wood and a big hammer, and hit it right short, quick. And the bit of a catch that goes through it breaks off, as a rule. And it broke off, screamed the whistle. She said, "Is that how you do it?" I said, "Yes." She thought I were in for burglary. She didn't know and didn't care. She got into that room, and she'd also gained a bath for him. So she weren't bothered. And she were making certain, she believed in that theory of feed the brute, like, to get bath put in. And then they come and ask you favours, could you not get something for them? Well, I didn't mind pinching paint for them to paint the kitchen. I'd have pinched prison gates for cigarettes. They weren't my gates. And, one Saturday morning, you know, if there were any fog, they didn't take you out, because we were right against the railway embankment. And if they did, they sent two. So, one Saturday morning, they wanted water coupling up. And it were 3 white joints. And Bower said, "Could I do it?" I said, "Yes." "Can you put that boiler in?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Are you sure you can do it?" I said, "I am, if you can do yours." I'm getting out of town. There's, you can be troubled on doing a job like that. I'm talking, I'm on a plumbing job now. And you can be stuck with water coming through pipe, and nobody can do a job with water coming through, even if it's only a drop. Well, there's tricks of which you put bread into pipe to stop it coming while you wipe your joint. So I asked for a slice of bread, and everything went quiet. Why, asking woman for a slice of bread, that were unheard of. And they didn't know what I was asking for it for, whether it were to eat or what. I said, "And a piece of firewood." So then they thought it was something. But when I got this bread and shoved it up pipe, you see, they have all sorts in there who do diabolical tricks, you know, to get their own back. They thought, "What's he doing, shoving bread up there?" Well, I wiped this joint. Now, you're aware of getting it out, this bread. If it hasn't softened with water up to it, it might be a column of air behind, you know, all it back. You warm your pipe to expand it, and then pressure pushes it through. Lamp wanted refilling. So when I turned water on, no water came. And you can see there's 3 or 4 watching me. Brilliant woman, husband at house and 2 screws. Her husband were off duty. There's 4 watching, this no water come, what's he done? And they're all ready to believe worst. So, and this bloke who should have been putting boiler in, watching me. He hadn't touched boiler. So, I lit lamp again, and warmed it over at pipe, and all of a sudden it all spluttered through, this breadcrumbs and, you know, like slush. And you could hear it. And everybody's pleased. Got water on. Didn't think it could be done, and they thought they'd been tricked. You know, they thought worse than everything done. So I was to put boiling, so they worked over. When I went in, he said, he's right, and he talked behind your back, like. They decided I were a proper tradesman and so on, because they didn't know then. And take him through the kitchen, gave him some extra food. Well, I got two dinners, plus a pile of bread. And I was that hungry, I ate a lot. Well, I was sick all Saturday. But I was that hungry.
Did the warders know what you were in there, the screws?
They know what
you yes.
Yes,
what was their attitude towards you?
All right. He didn't care. It was his job as third engineer and second engineer and first engineer to put hot water and baths into these houses. How they got in, he didn't care. And so long as you did your job, they didn't bother what you were in for. You could have been in for murder. They didn't care, so long as they were getting that, so long as you weren't upsetting them.
Well, so you wouldn't have had any abuse at all?
They started arguing with me. But they took a different line with me because they were comparing me with some Jehovah's Witnesses who were in. And I must have compared favourably in their eyes, than more favourably than the Jehovah's Witness. So we got on really well, and my discipline screw was a perfect gentleman. If ever he's alive today and I could help him in any way, he was great. A fella called Sumners was a wonderful fella. When he was on at nights, he used to bring me two slices of bread with cheese on. Not giving that away, doing it with no white thing. And he used to wrap it up in Sunday paper, big main leading articles. Because, you know, he didn't get anything to read like that. And he'd bring it in when he were on nights. Well, up till 8 o'clock, you know. When I'm what they call late. Open my cell door, give me a cigarette and give me these and some matches and say, you're all right tonight, plumber, I'm on. So you could smoke to your heart's content. You didn't need to be blowing it out at the window riding because he were on. And he had this supper.
What did the other prisoners think of this? Did they have any idea?
They didn't know I was getting things like that because I was out with them. I went in workshops with them.
I suppose you had very little to do with the other prisoners then, did
well,
you?
Well, only, you know, little recreation time. Well, not recreation, but slopping out and all these things. You'd meet at workshops sometime. That was on the first time I was in.
Before you did your plumbing, that is?
Yes, you go in there. Mm. And they knew I had a good screw. They knew that because they knew when he were on their part, he was decent with everybody. He weren't just decent with one. So after that, when we gone to the others, I were getting more food through these women than what they were getting. But old hands know that them that goes out working gets these bits of perks, and they go in with all sorts of tales. They hear about it, so they say that next time they go in, they say they're a painter. That's a favourite one, because anybody can put some sort of paint on, can't they? Well, they'd said they were anything and trying to get out. Well, the fact that you said you were a plumber and was one, like union secretary, time served and all the rest, there was no doubt about it. Well, you was well away. Then I started a bit of a sideline, making aerials out of ball taps for the wireless set. A copper ball, you know, a hunt ball tap, is a good aerial. Was when they used to need them more than they do now, and I made them with an insulator on and a bracket and coupled them some wire on to fix them
for the prisoners.
No, for screws took
yes.
them out.
I see.
And where were the pinch paint? Oh, Manchester, that second time. Mm. So I got on well, and Alden was the chief engineer. He's in plain clothes. And he used to come talking to me. And they were really kind.
What were the conditions like in prison? The sort of hygienic conditions, for instance?
Well, the stricter the prison and the cleaner the place. Where it's easy prison, things were allowed to be a bit slack. You had to clean your cell out, you know, and mop floor, you'd had to do. Your bedding was changed each week. Your sheets and pillow slip. Your shirt. Oh, there was trouble if you didn't get for a bath once a week. And I was missing out with being on this on, and they found out. And I was taken down specially. And where they only put three or four, they had a line on bath, you know, during war, you hadn't more. Well, with me, it didn't matter. They filled it up and they gave me an extra towel. Little, as I said about the capitalist one, I got the little extras. They gave me another towel. Plenty of hot water. Nobody bothered me about having to be in only so long. And because they took me down at out of ordinary times for bathing, because they were insisting on getting these jobs done. And that went on. I did about 4 hours or more, 4 or 5 hours. And then I came up before an appellate tribunal again. And I was taken up in handcuffs with a Quaker, a doctor, medical student, a nice lad from Liverpool. His father was a parson, holding the rank of major in army. He seemed to know all about this here, and he didn't approve of his son, who was a medical student and a Quaker, and a CO. And I was handcuffed to him. And as soon as you go through the gate, they come round giving you cigarettes. Everybody. Because this Quaker got him and gave me them. He didn't smoke. And you were smoking cigarettes all the way to Manchester. He's going to run out of tape.
I can't
guess. He's cost a fortune for me to come down.